Good morning, Pyle. 7 o'clock. Jim along with Tyler Friends and Cake. Nipsey Hussle.
Morning.
Busy show today?
Yes.
The Avs followed the Blues last night.
Yeah. That was kind of an ugly game, not going to lie.
The Blues last night, they found a way to slow things down. They made it their kind of game. Grind it out, ugly hockey. But you know what? They won.
That's the trick.
And the Avs couldn't match the effort last night of the St. Louis Blues.
Nope.
David Perron with a couple goals for the Blues last night. Gabriel Landeskog gets a power play goal, but that's it. The Avs fall 4-1. So now they go to St. Louis for game 3 tomorrow night. Carbona Mesa, they get a outstanding performance from Cannon Handy and Cooper Vasquez. They combine on a two-hitter. Mavs eliminate West Texas A&M last night, 5-3. Hayden McGeary hits another one to McGearyville. His 30th home run of the season, leads the nation in the D2 ranks. So they'll get St. Edwards today. It's best 2 out of 3 now. West Texas A&M, they're done. They lost to St. Edwards earlier in the day, and so now it's the best 2 out of 3 between the Mavericks and the Hilltoppers. We'll have the first game today, 3 o'clock on the Team Sports Network, 2:45 pregame for that one. So we have a lot to get to. High school baseball postseason is underway today. You have the Delta Panthers on the road at Sterling. They take on Bennett this morning at 9, and then over at Northfield, the Montrose Indians, they face Denver North. Yeah, Palisade, your number one team in the 4A state baseball tournament, hosting Region 1. And we'll talk with Nate Porter about that. Also, Fruita Monmouth's baseball team, Casey Sullivan, they're into the 5A postseason. We'll have those conversations this morning. Plus, Casey Underwood, the coach of Snead State, Alabama, coming to JUCO for the first time. So we'll talk with him later on this morning. Might see if the skipper, Chris Hanks, has a few minutes this morning for us as well. You'll get to hear the Memorex version, the recorded version coming up. Ray McLennan talked with him after the game last night when the Mavericks took down the Buffalo. So thoughts on the Avalanche loss last night? What takes a little wind out of you, out of your sails if you're an Avalanche fan? If you're a CMU baseball fan, timely hitting, great pitching.
That's all you need.
That's what it's about with postseason baseball. And they got that last night. Chase Hamilton had a 3-hit night. Got a couple of great defensive plays from Caleb Farmer at third. And the Mavericks did a great job just putting the collar on the Lone Star Conference Player of the Year, leads the nation in RBIs, Andrew Becker. He was 0 for 4 last night. A couple of punch-outs last night by the Mavericks pitchers on him. So, tremendous performance by the Mavericks last night. And now, St. Edwards today, Metro State. I haven't checked the score this morning. They were just getting throttled by Angelo State in the other part of the South Central Region tournament.
Oh, no. Whatever. Whatever will they do?
I just feel really, really bad for him. Feels just so terrible for Metro State.
Darn the luck.
So it's kind of it's wide open today. Anything you want to comment on? Well, it's always been bubbling under the surface, but the now very public open feud between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban.
I love it. Because nothing, really, truly nothing screams college football quite like two multimillionaire head coaches being so catty with each other. Like two high school cheerleaders, this is. And I mean, are there valid points being thrown around by both of them? Absolutely. What I find most hilarious is that Nick Saban, of all people, went after Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Now, Primetime, his response has been mostly relegated to the social media sphere and Twitter. And whereas Jimbo has gone all the way
to... Well, they had SEC Media Day going on, so
He called a presser, and he's like, I'm going to air it out. Here's my list of grievances. This is my Martin Luther 95 this season. I'm nailing it to Nick Saban's door. And you know what? Again, it's entertaining. It's setting up what will be a fantastic Alabama-Texas A&M game, or at least we think it'll be fantastic. And then by the second quarter, when Bama's up 28-0, you know, that then maybe not so much.
Yeah, and if you're Deion Sanders, you're like, so you're gonna drag me into this now?
Right.
Nick, I don't even play you.
We're not on the same level.
Yeah. Saban claiming Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to school. It was in the paper, and they bragged about it, and nobody did anything about it. Saban apparently was referring to the 24/7 Sports top-rated prospect in the 2022 class, five-star cornerback Travis Hunter, who flipped his commitment from Florida State to Jackson State. And Deion Sanders, Jackson State's coach, had a report last year that Hunter received a $1.5 million name, image, likeness deal and sent multiple overnight tweets in the wake of Saban's comments he would address the lie that Saban told about Hunter. Saban told ESPN Thursday he's reached out to Sanders, although the outlet did not specify if the two actually talked.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say they probably didn't. And you know why? Because Deion Sanders would probably say something about, spoke with Coach Saban, this is what I told him. You know, I feel like that conversation, if it happened, which, again, I doubt, but if it did happen, I'm sure details of it would be coming out from either Nick Saban or Deion Sanders, more than likely Coach Prime.
Deion Sanders saying, I still love him, I admire him, I respect him. He's the magna cum laude of college football, and that's what it's going to be because he's earned that. But he took a left and he should have stayed right. I'm sure he'll get back course. I ain't tripping. See, they're in the Aflac commercial together, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Yeah. So, aren't they? Apparently, they did not spend a lot of time bonding during that.
Not a lot of time spent at craft services table going.
Deion, how's it going?
I understand you.
Nick, coach, how have you been? Yeah, not there. There wasn't much of that going on, apparently.
So, that corner you brought in, $1.5 million?
I just, if you're Deion Sanders, like you're sitting there going, okay, I get it. Jimbo, Nick, you're in the same conference, and they had the 8-5 star guys that came in, and you want to go after him for that, but feel like you paid for those guys to show up to College Station. But
well, and
I mean, come on, if you're Deion Sanders, like, man, leave me out of this.
And I think on Saban's part, I think it's a fundamental misunderstanding of what name, image, and likeness really is, because it's not a salary. It's not the university paying you to play whatever sport you're playing. What it is if a company wants to do a brand deal with that particular college athlete because they have clout or they have marketability. You know, once upon a time, a guy like a Spencer Rattler could have made millions of dollars on brand deals for his abilities at quarterback at Oklahoma before he got benched.
And transferred.
And not that he can't ever make a dime off his name, image.
But he went from like Heisman Trophy front runner,
first round
to
NFL pick,
losing his job and transferring
to
just like that.
What, South Carolina or North Carolina?
South Carolina.
The Gamecocks. So, again, it's not the university paying you directly to play the sport you play. It's if you are a top-rated recruit, you've got national recognition, you know, maybe you came from the Last Chance U's of the world or the high school ESPN documentary 30 for 30, you had this great life story that you, or you've got a YouTube following or a Twitter following, whatever it is, where you sort of have a pre-established following that reaches tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. Now you're going to major college football. Brands are going to want that because for as much as they may pay a particular player to be their brand spokesperson or their representative for their brand, the dividends are going to pay themselves back in a very short period of time. Yeah, that's what name, image, and likeness is.
I think Saban has an issue, and probably isn't addressing this the correct way, is that I think for a lot of programs, and I mentioned this yesterday, that money that goes, say, from companies that, say, I own a, you know, guy owns a car lot or whatever.
Right.
Chain of car lots. I mean, that's always the classic, right, college football recruiting thing.
Right.
Car dealership owner. And I'm giving $300,000 to the quarterback at Texas.
Right.
That was normally $300,000 I would give the Longhorns program. So, I'm now giving that money to him, and that money's not going to the program. And I think that's where some coaches are going to start to have an issue where, okay, in some cases, if they have NIL deals, that does help in recruiting. It helps to get a player maybe to come to a certain place, even though it's, you know,
right,
it's not directly, you know, Jimbo Fisher goes to a player, hey, look, I got a sweet, some of these deals probably are percolating in the background, shall we say.
Might be a little under the table,
but
so to speak.
But we've got, we've got this booster that, boy, you come here, boy, I'd love to, love for you to represent his auto dealership or whatever, or fast food chain or whatever.
Right.
And I think in some ways, okay, that can be used as a recruiting tool. No doubt about that.
Right.
But there's also the other thing that comes up now, that I think this speaks to Saban a little more, because I don't think Saban's not crazy about NIL. I don't have a problem, once again, I've stated this before, I don't have a problem of student athletes benefiting from their popularity, their success. I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
But it is somewhat unchecked. It's like the transfer portal. It's become unchecked. And there needs to be an, in the NCAA is the last group that's going to put any controls on this. I think the part of the problem is for some coaches is now money that players are getting, it's money we're not getting anymore. It's not money the program's getting anymore.
Right.
And I think that's probably, without Saban saying it openly,
right,
I think number one, he thinks A&M gets an unfair advantage that they are wielding the power of the NIL. And I think the deeper concern, the more long-term concern is, that's money we're not getting anymore for our program.
And getting back to a point you had just mentioned about the NCAA. Look, Saban, in hearing some of the clips from his actual, like, I guess you'd call it his catharsis, he says to that point that the NCAA's sort of failed leadership, or just kind of dropping of the ball on taking a real, hard look at name, image, likeness and creating a set of rules has been part of the issue. And I think he's absolutely justified in his righteous anger at the NCAA for not taking a real clear stance or just a clear vision.
They knew this was coming. They knew at some point this was going to go to the Supreme Court. And there's a chance they were going to lose, and they did. I mean, they lost with conservative justices ruling in favor of student athletes. Guys that they thought in the past would have probably
been on their side.
Oh, geez, we respect the integrity and the spirit of college football, so amateurism, but
nope.
No, they're like, look, we're going to look at this fairly. We're going to look at this as the individuals that are student athletes, we tend to deem them as employees. And they're employees that are not being fairly compensated. And so if they can find compensation through their fame, we have no problem with that. Brett Kavanaugh wrote, I think, the majority opinion on this.
He did, yeah.
And just basically, I mean, I'm just kind of...
He was pretty scathing about
just
it.
Just pretty much, hey, NCAA, you've been getting your workforce on the cheap. And that's going to... That needs to come to an end. And so I think that if you're the NCAA, they saw this coming. I've said this before.
Right.
They saw this coming years and years and years ago, that it was going this way. You know, after Ed O'Bannon and suing for the video game, the name, image, likeness stuff, yep, there, that this was coming, and Mark Emmert, who now, of course, is waving bye-bye, getting out of Dodge while the getting's good. They should have been addressing this stuff a long time ago. And so now, college athletics, college football most notably, left to sort through the pieces here. So got some thoughts on that today. Avalanche losing last night. I was doing the baseball game with Ray McLennan, and so I didn't get a chance to watch any of it. Caught a little bit of Connor's call and Peter McNabb, going home last night.
Right.
And thank you, Cannon Handy, for working very quickly last night, by the way, because the other game went long before. But, you got some thoughts about that last night. Mavericks getting the win against West Texas A&M. Looked great last night. Pitched it really well. Cannon Handy named to the second team, All-South Central Region team. What a shock. Hayden McGeary, Region Player of the Year again. That guy. So we'll talk with Casey Sullivan, Fruto Monument baseball coach, coming up in a few minutes. Fruto Monument, they are into the 5A postseason, so we'll have our conversation with Casey Sullivan coming up in just a few minutes. But right now, let's get to...
What's happening?
All right, start things out with the Avalanche from last night. After a Game 1 overtime win for the Avs, Colorado couldn't match the intensity of St. Louis in Game 2 as the Avs fall 4-1 last night at Ball Arena in their second-round playoff series. The Blues' David Perron scored 2 of their 4 goals as the St. Louis win snaps Colorado's 8-game postseason winning streak against the Blues. Avs coach Jared Bednar says, at times the Avalanche effort was there, but also at times they just got outworked last night by the Blues.
Similar, I would guess, to like Game 1. I thought we were the quicker team. I thought we worked extremely hard. And that was like probably their biggest adjustment, right? They needed to get that work out of their group. They got it, and so they were much better, and we were worse.
Captain Gabe Landeskog scored the only Colorado goal on a power play. The series is tied up 1-1 as the scene shifts to St. Louis for Game 3 tomorrow night, pregame at 5:30 on the Team Sports Network. Colorado Mesa pitchers Cannon Handy and Cooper Vasquez combined on a two-hitter as the 17th-ranked Mavericks baseball team beat West Texas A&M 5-3 in CMU's opening game of the South Central Region Tournament of Bergman. Handy set down 9 straight Buffaloes hitters to open up the game.
Cannon has given us a chance to win in every outing he's pitched this year, and he went deep in that game, one hit, I think. We left runners on, or we could have made it more comfortable for him. That's what we needed in Game 1, and especially to start the tournament.
CMU coach Chris Hanks, Vasquez came on to pick up the save. Mavs DH Hayden McGeary hit his 30th home run of the season with CMU shortstop Chase Hamilton adding a 3-hit night. The loss eliminates West Texas A&M after the Buffaloes also lost to St. Edward's 16-5. CMU faces St. Edward's today at 3 at Bergman Field. Pregame at 2:45 on the Team Sports Network. The All-South Central Region baseball team was announced Thursday, and no surprise that Mavs DH Hayden McGeary repeats as the Regional Player of the Year. McGeary leads the nation in home runs, along with batting average, was selected by the D2 Conference Commissioners Association and the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association. CMU senior catcher Spencer Bramwell, first-team selection by both associations, with Mavs third baseman Caleb Farmer, shortstop Chase Hamilton, and pitcher Cannon Handy making the second team. Grand Junction High's Miller Jones took second in the triple jump on the first day of the 4A State Track and Field Championships in Lakewood. The Tigers junior posted a jump of 46 feet, 4.5 inches. He also took 10th in the 110 hurdles. Defending 400-meter champion Justin Blanton of Central qualified for the finals in 3 events, the 100, 200, and 400. Blanton was second in qualifying in the 200. The Warriors 4x800 relay team finished 9th. The Montrose boys 4x200 relay team finished 7th and nailed down a spot in the finals. The Indians' Trevor Hill took 7th in the shot put. And the girls, Palisades' Gabby Horton posted the fastest preliminary time in the 100 at 12.4 seconds. The Bulldogs' Olivia Langer took 5th in the high jump, and 5A girls, Fruto Monument's Luca Knopf, was 8th in the discus. In 3A, North Fork girls 4x200 relay team posted the fastest preliminary time, with the minors Leah Ellenberger taking 3rd in the high jump. North Fork girls 800 relay team also qualified for the finals with a 5th place finish. The minors Matthew Casper is into the finals for the 110 hurdles and the 400. Delta's Clay Sandridge took 2nd in the discus, with the Panthers' Damian Gallegos qualifying for the 400 finals. The Delta Panthers baseball team is the 13th seed in the 3A postseason, and they hit the road to Sterling for today's opener. The 4th seed Sterling hosts the district, but the Panthers open up with the 20th seed Bennett. The Tigers are 14-9 in the season, scoring 9 runs per game. Panthers head coach Steve Ryer says Bennett has a good offense and a pitching staff that will battle.
We had an opportunity to watch them play when we went to Greeley a few weeks ago. They swing it very well. Pitching-wise, they don't have anything overpowering, but sometimes having guys that can change speeds hit spots is just as effective.
Delta plays Bennett at 9 o'clock this morning in Sterling. The Montrose Indians baseball team is the 13th seed in the 4A state tournament. They head to Northfield to take on the 20th seed Denver North baseball club in the first round. Last month, the Indians beat Denver North 11-6 with the Vikings' Isaiah Padilla being the dominant bat against the Montrose pitchers. Indians head coach Landon Wareham says Padilla got to them the last time out, but they hope to replicate that win from April.
We played him earlier this year, and I think he was 3-for-4 against us with three doubles. You know, he's a real deal, you know, and they're scrappy. I mean, it took everything that we had to go get him by a couple runs, and so we're expecting the same type of thing on Friday.
Indians won that one 11-6. They play at 1 o'clock today against Denver North. And the PGA Championship after the first day, Rory McIlroy 5-under with Justin Thomas 4-under, Will Zalatoris and Tom Hoge all 4-under heading into the second day in Oklahoma at the PGA Championship. 7:21, and that's
what's happening.
All right, we'll talk a little Wildcats baseball. 5A state tournament for Fruita Monument coming up. Casey Sullivan, their head coach, joins us next on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network.
I'm a big sports addict.
I like sports.
Sports.
This is the Jim Davis Show on the Team. 101 FM, 1340 AM, Grand Junction. 102.1 FM, Delta Montrose. Talking Fruita Monument Wildcat Sports on the Jim Davis Show.
Fruita Monument Wildcats baseball team, they take a 10-game winning streak into the 5A postseason. And we'll talk with Wildcats head coach Casey Sullivan. Our conversation with Coach Sullivan brought to you by the Rick Nelson Agency and American Family Insurance. For a free comparison, call this team of licensed professionals at 970-241-0078. Casey Sullivan joins us on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line. Good morning, Casey. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Always appreciate it. Your team in an excellent spot going into the postseason. I mean, with a 10-game winning streak, you repeat a Southwestern League champion, seventh straight year that you win the league title. And so from that standpoint, from a mojo standpoint, your ball club in good shape heading to that game against Horizon tomorrow.
We've had a good little stretch here, you know, but it's one of those things that's, you know, I don't know, maybe part one, and now we're going to jump into part two. And so, you know, it's one of those things that I think some of those wins are good for some momentum, looking forward to it on Saturday or whenever we end up playing.
So is there, because I looked at the Chassa schedule, and they have you 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. So, or are you 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, excuse me. So is that still the case? You're going to play Sunday morning?
Yeah, as of right now, that's the case, is that we're playing Sunday morning. But as you guys probably know with the weather and stuff, I don't know if things are changing or if things are still a little fluid. But as of right now, Sunday we'll be playing over there in Denver.
And that's just this time of the year, though, right? There's, look, particularly with being baseball in spring in Colorado, if you're not flexible, well, you shouldn't be a baseball coach or baseball player in Colorado, because the weather's always going to throw you a curveball, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a fact. So we're just kind of ready for anything, and whenever and wherever they tell us to play, we'll be ready for it.
So you have a Horizon, as I mentioned, and Horizon 15-8 on the season. They're out of the Front Range League, pretty good league. Casey, Legacy, they're 21-2. They won that league with a 10-1 record. Fossil Ridge 17-6. Broomfield was 15-8. Rocky Mountain was a 16-win team with an 8-win team in league play. So they come from a really strong league in that Front Range.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think though, also though, this time of year, any of those 32 are probably pretty salty baseball teams, and so I think they'll be all right. We faced them already before. We played them early this year, a baseball game that kind of got away from us with about one inning, and so hopefully we clean stuff up and it'll be a little different outcome this time.
Casey Sullivan, coach of the Fruita Monument Wildcats baseball team, with us. Yeah, you go back to when you faced them. It was early in April, April 2nd, that they picked up the 11-3 victory. And so, what was your takeaway from when you faced them last time out?
They were pretty decent. It seems like, if I recall right, they hit the fastball pretty well. But once we started turning things and being able to throw our second and third pitches for strikes, things started to get a little bit better for us. But again, I think we had that one inning and we kind of kicked the baseball around and it kind of got away from us, you know. And the one thing I've been learning this year is it can get away from you real quick. And so I think if we can limit that stuff, I think there's, you know, we can play with anybody. And so I think if we can, execute, I know we're a little better pitching now, and, defensively just play clean. I think we can play with anybody there.
Yeah, you just had that one bad inning, the third inning where you gave up seven runs to them that really kind of turned that game and was the difference in them getting the victory against your team early on in April. Casey Sullivan, Fertile Monument Wildcats baseball coach with us, champions of the Southwestern League, and with his Horizon Ball Club, Casey, Danny Sullivan, he's been their top hitter, .449 batting average, leads them in batting average and RBIs with 24 on the season. He's also hit five home runs. So they got a little bit of pop in their lineup with a player like Danny Sullivan.
Yeah, there's no doubt. They do. And they got, if I recall right, they got a little bit of speed too. And so, again, I think that we can, we're just going to have to play clean baseball. It's a tough day of baseball, but it's something that we're just going to have to go at them, and we're going to have to, for sure, you know, our pitchers, they're just going to have to execute. There's really no here and there's. They just need to be able to throw multiple pitches for strikes whenever they want and have some, you know, I think that gives us a chance then.
Casey Sullivan, Wildcats head coach with us. Casey, how do you approach it from a pitching standpoint? Because you got to win the first game to get to the championship game. But then that's where you're fortunate this year with Cole Jones, Dylan Noah, Andrew Lee. I mean, you've got some pitching depth, so it's nice because you've got some options there in terms of arms to go to in that first game and the championship game.
Yeah, that's no doubt. We have to, like I said, we got to win. So, we'll go out there and throw, I think we'll probably go with the Jones kid. I think he's given us, he's pitching a lot better than he was at the beginning of the year. And I think he gives us a good chance there. But like you said, we have options. We have, Lively throws well for us. If we need to run Jack Deere or Andrew Lee or Dylan Noah, the young Weaver kid is throws well. And so we're going to do pretty much whatever we can to keep them off balance and not let anything get away from us.
Casey Sullivan, Fertile Monument Wildcats baseball coach with us. Fertile Monument, the 17 seed, Horizon, the 16 seed. Right now set to play Sunday over on the Front Range at Regis. They are the host for the Region 1 tournament. Regis takes on Bear Creek, the 32nd seed. Regis, the number one seed in this tournament. And when you look at this Regis team and you hope to get a chance, you don't care who you play, Bear Creek or Regis, but odds are kind of saying Regis probably certainly has the upper hand of that as the number one seed. 20-3 overall, 9-1 in the 5A-4A Continental. So a really good ball club could potentially await you if you can get past, of course, this first game with Horizon to get to that championship game, Casey.
Yep, that's can't really say it better than that. They're a pretty tough ball club. They're number one in the state for a reason, and so it is where we ended up with our RPI stuff and how they selected everything, and so baseball is a funny sport, though. You got, a lot of things got to fall in place. I think there's any day anybody has a chance there. And like I said, this is the first year, though, I was talking with our assistants, and this is the first year I think we have, maybe four guys in our lineup that, if you make a mistake to them, they could, with a swing of the bat, put three runs on, and so that's a weapon that we haven't had in the past that I think we do have at least this year.
Yeah, no doubt. Jack Deer, Andrew Lee, a couple of guys that they could take a mistake and make somebody pay for it, regardless of who you guys are facing coming up this weekend. Well, Casey, I appreciate the time this morning. Thanks for coming on, and I wish you the best of luck on Sunday. Assuming it stays on Sunday, as of right now, it looks like that's going to be the case when you guys play over at Regis, 10 o'clock Sunday morning when you square off against Horizon. Casey, appreciate the time. Best of luck. Thanks for coming on today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
All right, Casey Sullivan, Fruit of Mammoth Wildcats baseball coach. So that game is set for Sunday. We've seen a lot of moving pieces with the weather.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Windsor is supposed to come over here, and Palisade is supposed to play today, but
that's not going to happen.
Because Windsor couldn't get here today, so they're going to play tomorrow, and we're hoping to bring you as much as we possibly can. It's a very busy weekend with Colorado Mesa baseball, and we're striving to get as much on as we possibly can. So we're... like I said, it's that time of the year. JUCO's on the horizon as well, so yes. We're going to talk with Casey Underwood. It's a big Casey Friday.
It is.
And Casey Underwood, the coach of Snead State, Alabama, is going to join us coming up at 9:20 this morning. All right, 7:35, we'll talk with Palisade baseball coach Nate Porter, the number one team in the 4A State Baseball Tournament. So we'll talk with him coming up at 8:40 this morning. 7:35, Jim along with Cake today from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. It's time for sound check.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
All right, what do you have today, Cake?
You remember that This Is Sports Center commercial with Peyton and Eli where they were touring the ESPN facility and they're kicking each other in the leg and kind of being, you know, brotherly, as it were?
Right.
Well, that is apparently art imitating life, because as Eli Manning would tell during coverage of the PGA Championship and the ESPN megacast, Eli Manning recounts a fairly recent golf trip that he and his brother took where some brotherly hijinks ensued.
4 or 5 years ago, we're on a golf trip, and Peyton tried to, like, I was getting dressed, I'm sitting in my bed, he tried to tackle me, and he kind of overshot, and he got stuck between the bed and a wall, and he was kind of in there, and I gave him an atomic wedgie. If you know, atomic means it's over the head. The wedgie, the underwear got over his head, and, you know, that was my proudest moment of my entire life.
5 years ago, Eli Manning...
Okay, even more than winning a couple of Super Bowls? That
even
was the
more than your wedding day?
Kids being born?
The birth of your kids? No. Getting revenge on your 6'6" brother.
Brother.
And giving him an atomic... First of all, I have my suspicions.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, Peyton Manning is 6'6", and... if you're getting underwear over the head of your 6'6" older brother at probably in, you know, 5 years ago, so we're talking probably mid to late 30s, early 40s. I mean, I see it seems doubtful. I think Eli might be.
All I know is that waistband.
It's gone.
That underwear did not stay intact.
No.
Did not stay intact.
No. And I mean, look.
But, you know, it's Peyton Manning. Maybe he got some really super secret, like, Fantastic Four Reed Richards kind of underwear that stretches with him.
Or like Elastigirl from The Incredibles.
Something like that. There you go. That's extremely stretchy underwear. I'm saying probably no. That was not the case.
I won't pry. I'm not going to dive deep into that, but I just thought that was funny, because it's like here they are, right? Two NFL superstar quarterbacks, one of whom is in the Hall of Fame already, the other who I think could one day make it to the Hall of Fame, and they're acting like total 8-year-olds on a golf trip.
It's what brothers do, though.
It's what brothers do. Well, me and my brother, I mean, when we were younger, sure, that was the sort of thing. I remember a story. My brother hit me, and instead of, you know, waiting for trouble to ensue, he literally just smack and put himself in timeout. Just walked away.
So he self-reported?
He knew. He was like, it was worth it. It was so worth it. So.
Yeah, I don't think I ever did anything ornery to my late brother, Bob. This wasn't an intentional thing. We were riding motorcycles one time, dirt bikes, and we were riding in a sand wash.
Okay.
And my brother was in front of me. And I'm flying up behind him, blind curve.
Uh-oh.
His bike had stalled. He was sideways in the wash. I hit him. It knocks his foot. Thank goodness his motorcycle boot, the foot peg went through underneath his foot, through the boot.
Ooh, yeah.
But it pinned him on the bike, and he fell down, and he sat down. He was just wearing jeans. He didn't have motorcycle pants on.
Uh-huh.
He sat down on the engine fin, which gets really, really hot on a, you know, an air-cooled two-stroke back in the day.
Right.
He sat down on it. He's screaming. He can't get off the bike because his foot is
stuck in the thing.
And I'm like, you okay? And he's like, my butt! And he's screaming. And at first, like, oh my God, his foot, it went through the, no. we get his foot loose.
Right.
Everybody cut foot loose. He pulls his pants down, and his butt looked like a Burger King hamburger. It had grill marks on his butt. And then my other brother.
Charbroiled.
My other brother was going on a date, and I was probably like, 9 or 10 years old. My brother was going to go on a date. He goes to the bathroom. He didn't lock the door. Silly, silly. This is my brother Bill.
Rookie mistake.
Doesn't lock the door. I grab a can of my dad's shaving cream.
Oh, no.
And he's sitting there on the throne doing his pre-date preparation, shall we say? Evacuation.
Right. You're right.
And I just hose him down with shaving cream. And I've never seen a human being run that fast with pants down around their ankles. He was red hot. He was angry. And if he could have caught me, I'm sure bad things would have happened. But I did get into trouble for that, though. Get into trouble.
I imagine.
And there were other things too, but they'll just leave it at that. All right, 7:41. And I'm sure I probably got an atomic wedgie at some point from one of my brothers, I'm sure.
Every now and then.
Yeah, at some point.
It'll happen.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Maverick baseball team gets a big win to open up the South Central Region Tournament, taking down West Texas A&M last night. We'll have that for you. Chris Hanks after the game. So text or call the show today, 970-242-1340. Chick-fil-A breakfast team phone line.
Yeah, I think they're like the best on the radio.
At least at the pro level, the best of the best.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
.745. Thanks for joining us, Jim and Cake, today from Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Always good to hear little Killers. I like that.
Oh, this is actually...
I thought this is Killers.
It's an artist called Sam Fender.
Oh.
This is his name.
Okay, I've heard Sam Fender. Hey, boy, sound like Brandon Flowers. Sound like the Killers for a moment. I stand corrected.
I can play Killers.
Is this 17 going under?
It is.
Okay. So it threw me off because he sounds right there a lot like Brandon Flowers the Killers.
There is a similarity. I didn't notice that until now, but now that I can totally hear it now.
I'm also a little punchy today, too. It was a late night last night
at
the ballpark.
You know what? All is forgiven, though.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Even though Cannon Handy worked a fast few innings, it was still...
it was a little bit late last night. But we'll get to the Mavs in a moment, but we'll start things out with the Avalanche. Avs falling 4-1 last night in the Western Conference semifinal series against the Blues. Nathan MacKinnon, I think, was pretty succinct. We were bad. We were really bad tonight. The streak, 8 consecutive postseason wins for the Avalanche over the Blues, by the way. Remember, they swept them last year in the first round.
Yep.
And that string came to an end last night with a 4-1 victory for the Blues. And after the game last night, Jared Bednar on the loss. Let's see, make sure I get the right audio here this morning. Here's, okay, just a shorter clip. Jared Bednar on the Avs And the effort just wasn't there last night against the Blues.
Similar, I would guess, to like game one. I thought we were the quicker team. I thought we worked extremely hard. And that was like probably their biggest adjustment, right? They needed to get that work out of their group. They got it, and so they were much better, and we were worse.
Bednar saying that the Blues were better in the neutral zone. Avalanche, their execution was poor because right. They didn't skate well. David Perron had the first and the third goals last night for the Blues. They just played a lot better. I mean, they did. Avalanche had just 19 shots in the first two periods. Remember, they put 54 shots on goal in the game one victory. So a night last night where just the Avalanche, you know, at times, Bednar said that they played with kind of the similar intensity, the up-tempo nature, but then the Blues just started to turn it into their game.
Right.
Slowed down the tempo, slowed down the Avalanche. Like Bednar said, their execution was poor last night. And so, Jared Bednar, like you said, look, it's just one game. It's a really good team. Series isn't over. It's not close to being over for us or for them. And I kind of thought that this would be the case. The Avalanche would have a game that they would lose. They would,
right.
I still think it's going to be a five-game series. But this is a big wake-up call for the Avalanche. I think, you know, they sweep Nashville. They had really only one game that they got challenged in that series was game two. Blues are a better team than Nashville. And we saw that last night. And so now it's time to regroup. Series shifts to St. Louis for game three tomorrow night, pregame at 5:30 right here on the Team Sports Network. Also, you had Colorado Mesa baseball last night over on our sister station, 1100 KNZZ. The Mavericks taking on West Texas A&M. West Texas had fallen to St. Edwards in the earlier game, 16-5. So the Mavericks last night got an outstanding performance, even though he kind of ran into trouble later in the game when he walked three straight guys and then a base knock by a pinch hitter brought in a couple of runs to make it a 5-3 game and make it a little more uncomfortable.
A little close.
But Cannon Handy, I thought, pitched really, really well for the Mavericks last night and set down the first nine batters that he faced. Mavericks get the 5-3 win last night. Hayden McGeary hits his 30th home run of the season, another absolute bomb. Cooper Vasquez comes in and does a really nice job coming out of the pen last night for Colorado Mesa. And so the Mavericks get the 5-3 win last night to move on to take on St. Edwards. So now it's a best 2 out of 3 between those two teams. And after the game, Ray McLennan was down on the field to talk with the skipper of the Mavericks, Chris Hanks.
I'm here with Coach Hanks. First off, congratulations on a great win. Talk a little bit about your pitcher, Cannon Handy, for us.
Well, Cannon has given us a chance to win in every outing he's pitched this year, and he went deep in that game, you know, one hit, I think. We left runners on, or we could have made it more comfortable for him. But that's what we needed in game one, and especially to start the tournament.
Yeah, you talked about leaving runners on. We noticed early in the game you were very aggressive on the bases. Was that a plan that you had going in?
Yeah, we wanted to take the game to them. We wanted to execute hit and run and stuff like that. And we executed two really nice ones. And those, really, that's how we produced our runs. You know, we're getting runners in scoring position, and we're hitting into double plays, or we're just not getting that hit. And, you know, in baseball, that turns at some point. I hope it turns soon because we've been in that rut for about 3 weeks now.
Yeah, it certainly does. Nice to get that home run out of Hayden McGeary, too.
Yeah, Hayden, of course, is dangerous every time he comes to the plate. And, you know, that was a big hit for him. I think that made it a 3-run lead, 3-0 lead. You know, and you're just clawing and fighting to get a 4-run lead, you know, so that grand slam won't beat you. And then if you can get to 4, you get to 5, and then it doesn't even tie you. And so that's what we're getting to, but our bunting game wasn't great tonight, and that's unusual.
Talk a little bit about tomorrow and the team that you're about to face.
St. Edwards is a team that's very well coached. They're very athletic. They've got a very good pitching. So now it turns into a best 2 of 3 series to go to the Super Regional. So we got Ryan Day on the mound game one, and we're going to go out and try to get that first one tomorrow.
Chris Hanks, Maverick skipper, after the win last night, 5-3 over West Texas A&M. So it's St. Edward's today for the Mavericks, and we'll have it right here on the Team Sports Network pregame at 2:45. Ray McClendon will join me once again for the first game, and then the second game, the Buckeye boy, Rio Van Gilder and Vern McGee will have that second game. And then tomorrow, if there is a game tomorrow, 1 o'clock, it'll be you and me doing that game tomorrow over at Bergman. But packed house once again, that field's become very quickly a fantastic place to watch Maverick baseball.
Absolutely.
And as much as Saplesio is a sensational facility, that I think this has turned into a much better situation than anybody thought it was going to be in regard to building the diamond at the Bergman Sports Complex. And that the field, from everything I hear, because there's been less wear and tear, plays better than Saplesio right now. No offense to the folks that do all the work over there, and they redid the infield here a few years ago. That's kind of the sense that this field tends to play a little better, and bounces are a little more true, things like that. And so it's just you get 400 or 500 people in there. It's
jamming.
It seems like it's absolutely packed, and the place was absolutely packed last night for that regional game.
It's got that sort of compact feel to it, right? Like kind of how you know how like sometimes a small car can go really fast for you because it's just more efficient. Your efficiency of space is better utilized. It feels that way because everyone's close together. Everyone's behind home plates for the most part. You've got pretty much a great view of the field no matter where you're seated. And like you said, 400, 500 people in there, it feels like a full crowd because
for that stadium, that's a pretty decent crowd. And there were, I'm sure, more people than that last night. So, but once again, 3 o'clock today here on the team. Both games, the 3 and the 7 o'clock, we'll be here on the team pregame at 2:45 today. So if you've got something on your mind, want to share with us today, text or call 970-242-1340. The Avalanche, unfortunately, lay a big egg last night, losing 4-1 to the St. Louis Blues. So if you've got some thoughts on that today, you can text or call us. We'll play Where in the World is Tyler Franzen coming up next hour. And let's go with a quick PGA championship update. Rory McIlroy right now, still your leader at 5-under. I think Rory's on the course just yet. He tees off later today. Justin Thomas is on the course right now, sitting at 4-under. Will Zalatoris tees off later on today. He's also at 4-under. All right, so text or call 970-242-1340. Next hour, Nate Porter, Palisade Bulldogs baseball coach, champions of the Western Slope League, your overall number one seed in the 4A tournament. They have Aurora Central coming up tomorrow out at their ball field. So we'll talk with Nate Porter coming up next hour. Also, Casey Underwood, the coach of Sneed State, Alabama, as they've punched their ticket for the Junior College World Series. And that Midwest district, Wabash Valley, they've had some weather issues, got pushed back a day. They're supposed to play Iowa Western. Then they ran out of daylight because Wabash does not have lights.
Oh.
Ooh, not good. Not good. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with Hour 2 on the Team Sports Network.